You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It's estimated that 100,000 to 300,000 underage girls, many of them endangered runaways, are being sex trafficked in the United States. Yet this topic receives very little attention in the national media. In her new documentary called I Am Jane Doe, award-winning director Mary Mazzeo sheds light on this national scandal and on a website that has largely enabled it. She joins us now, along with Carol Robles-Roman, the president and CEO of Legal Momentum, the Women's Legal Defense and Education Fund, and Tom, a father of one of the victims featured in the film. It opens this Friday at the AMC Empire 25, and I'm very pleased it has brought Tom, Mary, and Carol to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you for having us, Lenny. This is Mary.
Yeah, Mary, when did you first hear about this aspect of child sex trafficking?
So I read a story in 2014 about Jane Doe number one, Jane Doe number two, and Jane Doe number three in Boston that had filed a lawsuit against Backpage.com, the former Village Voice. And I remember thinking at the time, how is it possible that sex trafficking happens in the United States? I was like so many Americans when I had assumed that it happened far away from our shores.
Well, you're a former lawyer, aren't you?
I know. So this is a topic that I thought presented some really interesting legal issues. And in fact, the film started out as really more of an analysis, meaning we were going to focus on the lawyers and the issues in the case, right, which was all about how is it legal in the United States to host advertisements for children. Like, that didn't make any sense to me. Why is it that the federal judiciary was upholding these lawsuits in favor of Backpage? And then I started, interviewing the lawyers, and then I met the children, and I met their families. And you've got one of the fathers on the show with us today, Tom, and that was a game changer. This film pivoted. And it became their story, their journey. And in many ways, these parents and these children are almost like a modern-day Karen Silkwood or Erin Brockovich, right? They are channeling what has been extraordinary grief and trauma into extraordinary forward momentum so that this crime just won't happen to other children. It's really, their courage has been nothing short of amazing.
Carol, didn't you lead efforts in New York City to combat domestic violence and human trafficking when you were the deputy mayor? When did you realize the extent of child sex trafficking?
You know, when I first started to lead Michael Bloomberg's anti-trafficking efforts, and this is a confession that I make publicly, I wasn't quite convinced that there was, quote, a real problem. I thought these were isolated cases here and there. And my chief of staff, Norma Benny, really encouraged me to really get a closer look. So what I tell people is I did sort of, you've seen the show Undercover Boss, I was undercover deputy mayor. So I went into sort of the shelters, I visited some drop-in centers, and I spoke to children, and I was expecting to, hear some sad stories. I wasn't expecting to hear about girls that were being sold and girls that were having to do what they called survival sex at the age of 13, 14, and 15. I oversaw parts of the criminal justice system, and I can tell you that this was something that I was hearing for the first time.
Now, Mary mentioned that the company involved is Backpage.com, that's what it's now called, which began with ads in the Village Voice. Wasn't the Village Voice a rather progressive publication? Were they consciously publishing ads that were offering sex with child prostitutes in the classified section?
So this is Mary. I've got some insight on that, having interviewed a number of sort of ex-Village Voice editors and writers for the film. And in fact, the Village Voice was, spoke truth to power, right? Went after corrupt politicians, went after suspect corporate practices. So for them to have evolved into really the online destination for the sale of children is sort of nothing short of mind-boggling. But remember, the Village Voice, when it was in its printed edition, had like a middle section with all kinds of sex ads. right? And there are some really interesting stories about in the old days how the publisher, one of the publishers of the paper said, God, we've got too many sex ads, like we've got to increase our rates. And they traced one of their major customers back to, I think it was a pimp in Brooklyn had bought, you know, really was placing 75% of all of the ads. So there was sort of this quasi-criminality that was happening even back when the paper was in paper form and didn't go online.
But when did it become clear that the advertisements in their adult section included ads for children?
That became clear not until the 2000s. And Lenny, if you think about the phrase human sex trafficking or sex trafficking of children, you really didn't hear that lexicon, right? Like that wasn't introduced as a concept, certainly into our public consciousness, really until 5, maybe even 10 years ago, right? So I think people had this vision or culture, they bought into this cultural notion, hey, this is kind of sort of prostitution, this is consenting adults. And certainly until I got involved with the project, I have to admit, and somewhat sheepishly, and I'm embarrassed, that I also bought into this, oh, this doesn't really happen. Like Carol said before, I was kind of a skeptic. You know, whatever consensual adults want to do, God bless. I had not a clue about the scope and the breadth of this crime to children. I was blown away.
Well, let's bring Tom into this conversation. Tom, your daughter, who's called JS in the film, is one of the victims of child sex trafficking. Can you tell us what happened to him? When did she go missing? How old was she?
She was 15 years old when that happened. And she made kind of an impulsive decision to leave the safety of her home and got caught up in all that. And same was about 108 days until we got her back, and the child we got home wasn't the child that left.
What did you think had happened when she went missing?
Well, we kind of had an idea when, you know, through the police and such, that this is what was happening to her. And we were looking, you know, looking for her and trying to find her. So, you know, the police had kind of let us know, you know, what was happening.
Well, had she left, just run away from home, or had she been enticed to leave by the sex trafficker?
Her brother had just gone off to college, and her other sister was a year older, kind of doing her own thing. Jessica and our family dynamic was kind of always the center of attention, and things had kind of, you know, the family dynamic had seriously changed. Her brother was gone. He was at college. Older sister with her own friends, first year in high school. She made an impulsive choice to leave, and she ended up at a girls' shelter and was professionally lured by a 22-year-old girl who was found her in that girls' shelter. And I don't think Jess intended on staying there for any period of time. I think she was, it was an attention grab. I think she was trying to get attention. And the next thing you know, she was gone and being sold on Backpage.com.
I'm speaking with Tom, the father of one of the victims featured in this film, I Am Jane Doe, with its director, Mary Mazzeo, and with Carol Robles-Roman, the president and CEO of Legal Momentum, the Women's Legal Defense and Education Fund. The film is opens this Friday at the AMC Empire 25 here in New York. Carol, is Backpage.com still associated with the Village Voice?
No.
So where do you find it?
Where do you find the ads?
Yeah,
you
is it all on the internet?
You pick up any way that you have to access the internet, and within 5 minutes, 4 minutes, depending how fast you know how to order a pizza or buy a pocketbook on Amazon, you can purchase a person. And I tell the story that's how I learned of how easy it was. The general counsel of Backpage had visited me at City Hall when she was on her, you know, goodwill tour, visiting sort of jurisdictions around the country.
Liz McDonald?
Liz McDougal. Miss McDougal. And she was regaling me with the wonderful tales of all her good work and all the good law enforcement partners that she had. And I had never even heard of Backpage. So I'm thinking, what is she talking about? So I took out my new iPad, and as she's talking, I started, she's, oh, we have these new safety protocols and this, that. And so I'm, you know, moving pretty quickly. And then I'm about to press a button, and I put in my zip code or something. And then up pops an incredibly provocative photo of somebody who was clearly a child. I mean, they don't say 13 or 14. I'm sure it said, you know, 18-year-old or grandma or whatever, but it was a kid. And so that's when I realized it's that easy. And so what we have seen in the last 5 years is the growth has exploded. So Legal Momentum has been traveling around the country talking to everybody. So the people who work with children know about this evil, and then everybody else does not.
Mary, who runs Backpage?
So Backpage is the CEO is Carl Ferrer, and the two principals, Jim Larkin and Mike Lacey, they ran Village Voice and the Village Voice empire. I think they acquired the Village Voice. It was the original Phoenix New Times, mm-hmm. which was much like the Village Voice, kind of this libertarian, progressive, speaking truth to power paper. And they bought the Village Voice in 2005, and the Village Voice marched forward and really came under so much heat by about 2012. Craigslist had just shuttered its adult ads a couple of years prior, and much of the traffic migrated over to Backpage, of course, part of the Village Voice, and really the only revenue, according to a Senate report, stream for the Village Voice, interestingly enough. And at that time, Backpage was number two. It was like the ugly step cousin and the raunchier version of what was happening with Craigslist's adult ads. And so when Craigslist shuttered its adult site, traffic migrated over to Backpage. And that's when things really started to explode. And Backpage very quickly became the market leader and did some really, I'd say they had an ingenious legal strategy.
They taught the people who were advertising what to say using certain coded words?
It's really sophisticated in many ways. So, yes, according to the Senate report and many of the legal filings, Backpage effectively would coach pimps and traffickers. And we tried this ourselves. So if you went to put an ad on Backpage and you said, you know, hot 15-year-old, you could have that in the title, but there was a drop-down menu for the child's age. And if you put in 16, a message would come up, and it wouldn't ban you from the site. It wouldn't say, are you engaged in criminal activity? It would say, oops, must be at least age 18. Okay, clue number one, right? And the other interesting thing that I think Backpage did was they hired a general counsel, and they really kind of like this is a little bit of a boiler room operation, and they really legitimized all of the activity they were doing by really shielding themselves with an extraordinary legal team. I mean, really brilliant legal team, as well as the support of the tech community under what they have been brandishing as, again, really smart move around First Amendment internet freedom arguments.
Well, Carol, how has Backpage.com won pretty much every lawsuit that's been filed against them? Isn't there a Communication Decency Act?
That's correct. And they have, as Mary just alluded to, they have really assembled a very shrewd group of expensive lawyers, expensive public relations teams. They, as I said, they had the Goodwill Tour going around the country. I mean, I got a call from NYU Law School, right? I think it was from the dean's office saying, oh, Liz McDougal would like to speak to you. And who turns that down? So you can assume that they went around just cultivating incredible goodwill. And so when they had their first lawsuit, the second lawsuit, and they won. And the courts...
Because there's some loophole in the law?
The law has been interpreted, and we have argued in our first amicus brief that we filed recently before the United States Supreme Court in one of the cases, that the immunity that has been interpreted by the federal judges, in fact, does not appear in the legislative intent of the statute. Now, that being said, federal judges follow what they feel are precedent, and so you have one judge following, and I'm going to, my opinion is, one bad decision of another judge.
So, even though the judges know that the girls involved can be 13 years old?
If you read these decisions, and Mary does such a masterful part, this is such an incredible part of the movie, where she has parts of the oral arguments, right, from the federal judges. And I won't name them because I don't want a spoiler alert from the movie. But they are so disaffected. There's one scene
you mean
where
the so-called judges.
My husband's
a
judge,
a bad joke.
I have to say, you know, they're wonderful most of the time. The jurists who have issued the opinions that are featured in the movie have done a disservice to the bench. They compare the girls to car ads. You know, there's a disconnect between what they are ruling on and how they have sort of sucked out the life and the meaning of what they're doing. And it's clear, which is the scariest part of all, they have no idea what Backpage is. I mean, it took me 5 seconds while I'm having a conversation with Liz McDougall to say, well, I don't really quite get what she's talking about. I picked up my iPad, I looked at it, and I said to myself, this is wrong. It's morally wrong, and more importantly, it's legally wrong. And so we at Legal Momentum, with our partner David Boies, we're taking up the mantle of these decisions, and we are pursuing litigation, and we are walking into federal court. Because our other position is, a lot of these cases were one case over here, one case over there, and meanwhile, Backpage walks in with this incredible, in addition, Mary, to being good lawyers, very expensive lawyers, and a lot of them. So you're talking about a real sort of David and Goliath situation here, and we're looking to really balance the scales of justice.
Let's ask Tom about your wife, Nicole, has filed a suit against Backpage.com. Isn't it going before the Washington State Supreme Court in the spring?
No, we won. It's going to court. We won in the Supreme Court.
Oh, you won in the Supreme Court?
In the Washington State Supreme Court, yes.
So is it?
So
being,
we're going to court.
Going to trial for fact.
Going to trial.
Uh-huh. And who? And you're suing Backpage.com?
Yes, and its holdings, yeah. Village Voice Media, as it was then. They've since sold it off, so.
So have they? Backpage has kind of shut down its adult advertising section. No?
Well, it's one of the greatest pieces of magic, right?
Lenny, get your iPad out.
Yeah, get
your
iPad
out, Lenny.
Go to backpage.com.
Dating section.
You will click over to the adult section, right? The escort section. It'll say, oh, we've been shuttered and censored. But click over to the women dating men. Click open to some of the affiliated Backpage sites, Big City, Naked City. And the traffic has, of course, migrated. It was a magical, incredible PR stunt that Backpage initiated the night before all of their executives were subpoenaed to testify in front of the Senate, where they all not only took the Fifth Amendment, including their general counsel taking the Fifth Amendment, which is pretty extraordinary, but they also took the First Amendment, which I didn't know you could take the First Amendment in response to any kind of line of alleged criminal behavior, but, you know, what a magical piece of PR to shift this conversation away from alleged criminal behavior to a First Amendment internet freedom argument. And this has nothing to do with internet freedom.
We're pretty much out of time, but Carol, just one more question. What can the child welfare and homeless systems do differently to prevent girls from being involved in the sex work?
The vulnerable girls that are in foster care, that deal with the family court system, are most at risk. Every single person who comes in contact with young girls, especially vulnerable girls, must be trained in the signs of trafficking. And they must recognize when the girls are vulnerable before they have been approached by these pimps, by these traffickers, and they must seek help for these girls immediately.
Tom, how's your daughter doing?
She's doing good now. I mean, as far as good as she can do. And we're picking up the pieces, and we will be for the rest of our life.
Thank you all so much for being on our show. Tom is the father of J.S., one of the girls we've been talking about. Mary Mazzio is the director of the film, I Am Jane Doe, which opens this Friday at the AMC Empire 25. And also with us has been Carol Robles-Roman, the president and CEO of Legal Momentum, the Women's Legal Defense and Education Fund. Thank you so much, all of you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lenny, for
really
having us today.
It.